girl, OJ's fucking dead.
What?
Yep. Today.
Apparently, I've been living under a stupid rock because I hadn't heard that. Yay!
Yay! If it makes you feel better, I have also been living under a stupid rock, aka furiously in a writing tunnel, writing today's story. And OG listener Angie, hey queen, hit me up to let me the fuck know.
I love that. That's amazing. Thank you, Angie, because now yes. I know this information vicariously because of you.
Yeah. What a piece of shit. I try to not revel in the demise of other people, but I'll make an exception this time.
I think it's okay for this situation.
Piece of shit, murderer, abuser, wife beater, bad actor.
Yeah.
You know?
Don't hold back, Monique. Tell us how you really feel.
Absolutely. Fuck him. To use a Roberto Sanchez-ism, couldn't have happened to a nicer person. Fuck him.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I am just beaming right now. There are no tears. I'm okay with this. Yeah.
If you want to hear all about O.J. Simpson and his trial, which I am certain you probably think you know all of it, but there's way more evidence than you actually know, which is why it's extra wild that he got off. Listen to our 100th episode, because I covered him for an hour and a half. So
she did an amazing job. Again,
thank you.
I did not know so much of that information, and you did such a thorough deep dive. So yes, highly recommended.
Thank you. Yeah, fuck them. In addition to that awesome news, we have more awesome news for you. The day is here, my lovelies.
It's finally come.
The things we have been teasing is finally here. So many things. Number one, we have a website. What?
Yes, finally.
Fucking madness. Amy made it.
I did.
And it's fucking beautiful.
Monique helped. She worked her Monique magic, as I like to call it.
No, I literally said yes and no. That's it. That's all I did. She did everything else.
That's what I needed, though. I need that person in my life.
It looks gorgeous. On there, you will find a sign up for our newsletter, because we will be having a monthly newsletter to keep you abreast of all of the fun, sexy shit going down with this pod.
It's going to be titillating, pun intended.
Yes! Titties everywhere. Woo, woo, woo. But if you want to cover those titties, guess what? We have fucking merch, playa. Pew, pew,
pew. Yes. And it looks awesome. We made sure to get samples of pretty much everything just to make sure everything was of high quality, looks okay. I love everything, and I'm super excited for you guys to see it.
Absolutely. We made our merch to be stuff that we would buy, and now we have. And the reason I don't have more of it is because I need to get paid tomorrow, so then I could buy more of our merch.
Oh, it's a little payday reward. I love it.
Absolutely. To just rep the show. And we're also launching a Patreon. We have two tiers at the moment. We have the Cute and Creepy Cult for $6.66 a month, which if you just love the show and you want to support us, you can give us $6.66 and we will give you a shout out in our show and you will have our undying love forever and ever. That's a really good deal for $6.66. And then we also have the Partner in True Crime, which is $13 a month. And that gets you extra bonus content, including exclusive Patreon-only episodes. Fuck yes. It also gets you discounts to the merch store and first dibs on our live events. Because yes, we do have live events coming this year. We're so fucking excited. And sign up for everything so you can find out about it. Because over the last few years, we have been able to Instagram talk with you, but we want to meet you in person and hug your gorgeous faces and smush them and tell them how much we adore you.
Yes. We're so excited to meet our virtual friends in real life and become more than fans. We want to be friends.
Yeah, girl. Let's girl it up.
Yes. We need more weirdos like us in our lives.
Yeah, this is just a very exciting way to finally kind of meet the community that this bizarro show has built and then just build on that. And we are so excited. And we hope that you guys are excited about it too. So yeah, let us know what you think. Yeah, I don't know what else to say.
And no more needs to be said. Check it out. It's going to be great. We've got great stuff going on. We've been working very hard on it.
Yeah, we're so excited. Oh my God.
Same. We're so excited. We're speechless at this point.
That's it. You know what? That's exactly what it is. Thank you, Amy. You took the words out of my mouth.
Happily. I was like, thank you for telling everyone all of the good things we have happening today. And thank you for being my partner in true crime.
Likewise. Oh my God. And another thing, if you listen to this, when this comes out, we are going to be going live on Instagram on Monday, the 15th, tax day. Get your fucking taxes done. BT Dubs. We're going to be going live on The Pod, another fucking horror podcast, on Instagram at 6 p.m. so that we can talk more about all the fun stuff coming and answer any questions you guys might have, or, you know, just fucking say hi. What's up? So join us there at 6 p.m. on Instagram.
Our first live event, technically. We're getting the ball rolling.
Technically. Oh, my God. It is going to welcome back Amy's two-year absence from Instagram.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everyone. I'm bad at life and social media, very clearly.
She has not been ignoring you if you've messaged her. She literally doesn't go on Instagram. Doesn't see any of the messages I send her either.
I'm sorry. I know. I'm like weird and antisocial, and I just live in this bubble with my cat now and Johnny.
Who I finally got to meet.
You did. You finally got to meet your godchild slash cat.
My god kitty.
Very briefly. He's never met anyone, so this was a new experience for him. And he was a little skittish.
Sure. He was a lot better than I anticipated.
Yes.
He's a handsome boy.
He's very handsome. She got to see the swirl, the cult kitty swirl.
He totally has a cult kitty True Detective swirl on his fucking side.
He does. It weirdly does not come across very well in pictures, but like when you see him in person.
It's very prominent.
Yes, it's very distinctive. He's so cute. I'm so happy you got to meet him finally.
Me too.
And we got to hang out, which I'm never mad about. I'm always so happy to see you.
Literally same, on the fucking eclipse.
Yes, which was cool, which was exactly kind of what I imagined it was.
Yeah.
We were both very surprised by how cold it was.
I was just going to say.
Yes.
I was just going to say. And it's that thing that it's like, I noticed it got cold, but I didn't understand the correlation until I was walking outside on my way to you, incidentally. And everyone was out on their stoop looking up. And then someone was like, oh, yeah, you know, like, because the moon is blocking the sun.
The thing that brings us heat and light.
Oh, the thing that radiates heat? Yeah, that makes sense. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I know. I had the same realization, too. And I was like, it seems like it's getting colder. And then I was like, Amy, yeah, obviously it's getting colder.
Yeah.
It's like the sun is blocked right now.
Our warmth is blocked. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I had such a good time. It seemed so serendipitous that I got to see you on an eclipse day.
And we got to see each other on virtually on the earthquake day. So look at
that. Yes.
And OJ died. Look at this. All the things.
Beautiful. It's all coming together. These are signs from the universe that it's going great.
I love that. I mean, definitely on my Instagram, they're saying it's signs that it's not going great.
Oh.
But, you know, this is where we glass half full it.
Yeah. It's all in how you look at it, all in how you react to it.
Absolutely.
Positive spin.
Yeah, totally. I guess with that, should we just jump right into it?
Let's fucking do it. Regale me with your paranormal story for the week.
Prepare to be regaled. Let me tell you, I didn't realize that we were having a psychic sister moment, because sometimes I pick a story before you do a story. And I didn't realize that my story takes place in West Virginia.
Oh my God. I love when we're psychic sisters. See, everything's going great, guys.
It's all going great. Yeah. It's all going great. Because I saw a pamphlet for this while I was in New Jersey, which now I'm also very confused as to why there was a pamphlet for this in New Jersey if it's West Virginia. But also, I kind of noticed there's a lot of weird shit happening in West Virginia. And did I go through every single one of our episodes to see how many stories we did that took place in West Virginia? I sure did. That was an hour of my time that I did.
Did you?
I sure did. I sure did.
Oh my God, how many?
It is the state with the third most amount of paranormal stories that we have done.
Damn.
The other two are New York and California. California, mostly because we do a lot of celebrity ghost stories because they're iconic, obviously.
Yeah.
But I just would like to throw a couple numbers at you. New York State has a population of 19.6 million people. California has a population of 39 million people. West Virginia has a population of 1.7 million people.
Damn.
So the fact that it keeps being brought up as like, what the fuck is happening here is noteworthy to me.
Yes, something's going down in West Virginia for sure. And it's weird.
Yeah. And the thing is, West Virginia is also the only state to completely fall in Appalachia, which, as I covered in one of my stories, is sus and creepy as fuck. Yes. There's some wild ass shit happening in Appalachia. So all of these things are just very interesting to me.
Agreed.
Just wanted to preface all that. And I am going to be covering the Flatwoods Monster.
Yay! Okay.
So, sources, Wikipedia, all that's interesting. Columns, FairmontState.com, FairyTalesAndMyths.com, History.com, BraxtonWV.org, APNews.com, Project Blue Book, True Stories of the Flatwoods Monster, and the Flatwoods Monster documentary. The year was 1952. The setting, Flatwoods, West Virginia. While no one knows the exact date Flatwoods was founded, the earliest church in the area was established in 1830. By the late 1800s, the West Virginia and Pittsburgh Railroad extended a branch through town, and as a result, the community thrived, and in 1902, Flatwoods was officially incorporated. Flatwoods is located in the forested rolling hills of Braxton County, which sits at the geographical center of the state. And by all accounts, Flatwoods is your typical quintessential small town. In 1952, when our story takes place, the population was just under 300 people.
Damn.
Girl, I'm going to bet there's more people living in my building than 300 people.
For sure.
Today, it's at 258.
What? There's so much fucked up shit happening here that people are like, I got to get the fuck out of here.
You don't even fucking know. The small rural village is the type of nice country community where everybody knows everybody. With the exception of the occasional transplant here and there, Flatwoods is full of lifers. If you're born in this town, you're going to die in this town. And Kathleen May was one of these lifers. In 1952, she was a 32-year-old local beautician who had grown up in the area. Kathleen was described as a playful and feisty woman who was well-known and well-liked by the local residents. She had been married and had two sons, Ed and Freddie. However, when she got divorced and the boy's father moved away to Michigan shortly thereafter, she was more than capable of taking care of herself and raising her two boys. September 12, 1952. It was a clear fall evening. One of the other noteworthy characteristics of Flatwoods is that it is known for its consistently clear night skies. Andrew Smith, who runs the Flatwoods Monster Museum and the Braxton County Convention Visitors Bureau, said, quote, "We do have the advantage of having pretty clear night skies. We have the opportunity to see strange things that may take place in the sky that others might not see." End quote. The May brothers, 13-year-old Ed and 12-year-old Freddie, were playing football outside their school yard with friends 14-year-old Neil Nunley, 10-year-old Ronnie Shaver, and 10-year-old Tommy Haar. Then, at 7:15 p.m., they saw it. The boys saw a big, fiery, red glowing object the size of a house streak across the sky, go over a hill, and land in a nearby field that belonged to local farmer G. Bailey Fisher. What's interesting to note is that it was very evident to the boys that what they had seen wasn't a shooting star or anything that moved very fast, as the unidentified object seemed to pause when it topped the hill, then appeared to slowly float down and sink behind the hill. Once the entity was out of sight, the boys could see a light pulsing from behind the crest. 14-year-old Neil rallied the group to run up the hill and investigate, exclaiming that the object, quote, might have gold on it. Let's go check it out, end quote.
I love that reasoning. Yeah. I was like, sure.
It would never occur to me.
No.
Sure. Maybe.
Like, why not?
Let's fuck around and find out. So the five boys made their way up the hill via Depot Street, which just so happened to be where the May family home was. Since they were passing by their house anyway, Ed and Freddie stopped in and told their mother Kathleen and Jean Lemon, a 17-year-old distant cousin in the National Guard who had been visiting the May family at the time, what they had seen. And Kathleen and Jean decided to accompany the boys. Seeing as how it was dusk and nightfall was quickly approaching, Jean made the smart decision to bring a flashlight on their adventure. The family dog Ricky also got in on the action, joining the group of seven on their quest to find the mysterious object that had landed on a hillside somewhere on the Bailey farm. Upon reaching the top of the hill, while still a ways away, the group could clearly see the downed object protruding from the earth. It had landed nose down and resembled the shape of a spade standing out in the field sticking up. It was the size of a small house and surrounded by a thick, pungent mist. And as they made their way towards it, it emitted a strange, glowing orange light, as well as whirring and hissing noises. As the group approached the wooden gate on the property, that's when they saw it. Underneath the branch of a lone 12-foot oak tree, seemingly suspended in air, was a 10-foot-tall humanoid creature, the size of a very heavyset man, with a round, red, quote-unquote, face, surrounded by a, quote, pointed, hood-like shape, end quote, similar to that of the Ace of Spades, with glowing orange eyes, hands curled with claws, and wearing what seemed to be a dark metal dress. The body was dark and seemingly colorless, but some would later say that it was green. And it was slowly turning, waving from left to right, right to left, as if it was searching the horizon with these beams.
Weird. What the fuck?
What the fuck? I know. Kathleen later described the moment saying, quote, well, when Jean's flashlight beam hit it, it lit up like a Christmas tree. We all noticed it, all at the same time. It wasn't in any bushes. It was right there, under the limb, out in the open, right in the roadway. The whole thing lit up instantly. I was less than 20 feet from the monster. It made a hissing sound like frying bacon. Jean, who granted, again, is 17 and the oldest other than Kathleen of this group. Jean dropped the flashlight and screamed. He screamed so loud and fell back and stumbled over one of my boys and took off running. It was a hideous sight, and I wish I had not seen it, end quote.
Jean, I am right there with you.
Girl, I fucking know.
Oh, my
God. Not a hero.
No.
At all. I'm saying me, not Jean's great. I'm not saving anyone, man. And I'm not going to be like, let's find out. Nope. I'm not going to find out shit.
Nope. I'm not sticking around. Getting the fuck out of there.
The monster was seen only momentarily, as when the creature was hit with a flashlight, it tilted over to the boys and emitted two little beams of light that concentrated on the children. The enormous being emitted a hissing sound and immediately sailed through the air towards the terrified group who bolted. Ed said, quote, we basically ran all the way to the house. No one said a thing, end quote. John Gibson, who was a high school freshman at the time and knew all the boys, said, quote, one of the boys peed his pants. Their dog ran with his tail between his legs, end quote.
Damn. I mean, correct. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
I'd need new pants too, clearly.
For sure. In the days that followed, some of the members of the group reported throat irritation, vomiting, and nausea, which persisted for days, and which they attributed to the pungent mist at the scene. Authorities were contacted, and the story made the local news. The local sheriff, Robert Carr, and a deputy were out on a similar call that night in Frametown, 20 minutes away. It had been reported that a small plane had flown into a hill and exploded. However, upon their investigation, they found no evidence that a plane had flown into a hill or that there had been a fire. The sheriff and deputy then searched the Bailey Fisher farm that evening, but, quote, saw, heard, and smelled nothing. On September 13th, the National Guard was dispatched by the U.S. Air Force as part of Project Blue Book to investigate the mysterious incidents that had taken place the night before. For those who don't know, Project Blue Book was the code name for the systematic study of unidentified flying objects by the U.S. Air Force from March 1952 to December of 1969. According to some sources, at the site, investigators found an impression on the ground 20 feet wide in circumference. It was said that the trees in that area were singed at the top and that the branches were actually broken by something that had come down from up above. A grease-like substance was also found on the grass that smelled of sulfur. And the captain was allegedly ordered to send as much of it as he could immediately back to the Pentagon. Following this encounter, the town was visited by some men in black sent by the U.S. government to go to the May household to speak to the witnesses. They allegedly took the dress Mrs. May wore that night because it had some oil on it and told her that they would return it. But they never did.
Of course not.
Mm-hmm. Fred said, quote, all the people that were there took pictures of it, took samples of the oil, stuff like that. Never did hear anything back from the samples of the oil. So don't know what that was. End quote. Shortly after their sighting, Kathleen received a letter from the Pentagon, which claimed that the UFOs she and the six others had seen on September 12th were merely experimental rockets. When recounting the letter later in life, she couldn't remember the exact details of the letter, but she distinctly remembered that the letter concluded with a stern warning to keep quiet and not tell anyone about the event. Which, that's, you know, lady doth protest much.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Sus as fuck. Also, I'm telling everyone, fuck you.
Absolutely.
This is insane. People need to know.
Yes. Local authorities laughed off the group's claims and disregarded the symptoms and accounts of the seven eyewitnesses, attributing them to side effects of hysteria. Which, sure. Although it is worth noting that these are also telltale signs of exposure to mustard gas.
Oh, okay.
Just throwing that out there. Local newspaper publisher from the Braxton Democrat, A. Lee Stewart Jr., however, decided to investigate for himself. He said he marched up that hill with a shotgun after the witnesses told him what they had seen, which I fucking love.
Yeah, I mean, it's West Virginia. Like, one, I'm sure everyone has a gun. Two, yes, I'm not going anywhere near this place that I heard all this crazy shit without
being
armed.
If they're like, this is the crazy shit that's out there, you're going to be like, I'm going to go not packing? Absolutely the fuck not.
No, I'm bringing the fucking shotgun. Thanks.
At least a fucking dog, you know? Fuck.
Yeah.
And up there, he said he found what looked like skid marks on the roadside field, along with, quote, an odd gummy deposit, end quote, traces attributed to the landed, quote unquote, saucer. Stewart went to bat for the seven witnesses, saying, quote, those people were the most scared people I've ever seen. People don't make up that kind of story that quickly, end quote. The story got picked up by the national radio and big papers all over the country. Just days after the incident, Kathleen May, Jean Lemon, and A. Lee Stewart were all flown to New York to appear on the CBS program We the People to discuss what Kathleen and Jean had seen on the Bailey Fisher farm. The segment also featured the first appearance of Mr. Stewart's rendering of the Flatwoods Monster.
I love that they told her not to tell anyone. She was like, I'm going on national fucking television.
I'm going on CBS, bitch.
Like, tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
However, the newfound attention on the May family proved to be challenging. They were made fun of, the boys were teased at school, and told that they had made the whole thing up. As a result, the family just stopped talking about the incident altogether. local resident John Gibson said, quote, "They suffered a lot of ridicule. I have personally tried to talk to the May boys about what they saw, and they just wouldn't talk about it. They just didn't want to be the object of ridicule. Pretty much, the witnesses clammed up after the sighting," end quote. The official military stance was that the bright object in the sky was a meteor, which many residents in Maryland, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia had reported seeing in the sky on the evening of September 12, 1952. As for the Flatwoods Monster, investigators said that under poor lighting, the frightened eyewitnesses likely mistook a barn owl perched on a tree for a 10-foot humanoid monster with clawed fingers, which definitely reminds me of your story where they were saying the same shit.
Yes.
That the alien was an owl. From yes. people who literally are born and die in this fucking town. Like generations upon generations upon generations.
This is not
they've seen a fucking owl.
Yeah, this is not the first owl they've seen.
Yes, they know what the fucking owl looks like.
Also, it wasn't poor lighting. They literally shined a flashlight directly fucking on it.
Correct, Amy. That's fucking correct.
And barn owls have white faces, if I'm not mistaken, not bright red, like they said. What? Make up a better fucking story if you're going to lie to these people.
Yes, correct. Which, whatever. Okay, fine. It's a barn owl. That's all great. Except that a farmer who lived on a hill 3 miles away came forward shortly thereafter and claimed that he, too, had seen the large object that night. He said that he saw it pulse a red light for 10 to 15 minutes, that it pulsed the same colors, but getting redder and redder and weaker in the amount of light it gave off. The farmer was also pretty sure that as it pulsed, the whole object itself was diminishing in size. About 20 minutes later, he said the object finally disappeared in a pinpoint of light. Then it was complete darkness. In fact, on September 12, 1952, the exact day that the seven people saw what has been known as the Flatwoods Monster, six unidentified flying objects were reported in the skies around West Virginia, coming from the north and headed southeast. Four of the objects were tracked across the U.S. through eyewitness reports on trajectories that took them as far away as Alabama. One of these is said to have exploded mid-air over the nearby town of Gasaway, just 19 minutes away from Flatwoods, which, given that the sheriff was called 20 minutes away to investigate a plane that crashed, it could be that it was this. Then, on the evening of Sunday, September 13th, the day after the Flatwoods incident, there was another strange sighting. Again, just 20 miles away, near Strange Creek, George and Edith Snitowski and their 18-month-old son were driving on Route 4 through the rural area between Clay and Braxton County when their car suddenly died. George attempted to restart the car repeatedly, but to no avail. It was night and the road was desolate, and the Snitowskis were essentially shit out of luck with no help in sight. While they were trying to figure out what to do, suddenly a foul, sulfurous smell filled the air and their baby began to cry. Then a strange bright light filled the darkness, and the couple saw a 10-foot-tall creature hovering in front of their car.
Just the thought of a 10-foot-tall anything.
No.
Let alone a, like,
out of nowhere
foreign creature that you've never seen before, you've no reference point for whatsoever. Beyond terrifying.
Yes. While the Snitowskis' description of what they saw was similar to the Flatwoods Monster sighting the day before, the creature was not wearing a spade-shaped hood or a metal dress. Instead, its head was reportedly reptilian and bony. The creature dragged its lizard-like hand across the hood of the car before drifting away into the woods. As soon as the monster was out of sight, the car magically restarted and the couple sped away.
What the fuck?
Girl. On September 13th and 14th, two pilots in Pennsylvania, 5 hours away or an hour plane ride away, both recounted seeing a large unknown craft jet past their planes. A few days before the now infamous sighting on the Bailey Fisher farm, there was yet another sighting of a creature similar to the Flatwoods Monster. This sighting was reported by Audra Harper, who claimed to have seen the creature while walking through the woods near her home, near the town of Heaters, about 5 miles north of Flatwoods. Audra and a friend were walking to a nearby store, but the road leading out of their property was torn up and rutted, so they took a shortcut through the forest instead. About half a mile into their trip, they spotted a fire on one of the passing hills but dismissed it, chalking it up to one of her neighbors out fox chasing. When Audra looked back, however, the fire had completely disappeared. In its place stood a tall, dark silhouette of a man-shaped figure. Frightened, the two ran away, escaping between the rocks and boulders scattered around the hillside. After that, she never walked through the forest again. Even if she desperately needed something from the store, she would just go without. She refused to walk that way ever again. Her granddaughter Ashley Teets said, quote, "Then, a couple weeks later, she heard about Kathleen May and them, and she knew. Whatever she saw, it had to be part of that." End quote. The thing is, regardless of what the official U.S. Air Force records say, the residents of West Virginia have been reporting unusual aerial phenomenon for centuries, dating back to the 1800s. Allegedly in 1944, a West Virginia farmer found wreckage on his property that was of material he had never seen before. He told authorities, but when no one believed him, he just buried the wreckage with his trash and burned it.
Okay, bro, what?
Well, because also around here, like, you burn your trash.
Yeah, no, I know. I, like, used to live in a place like that, but, like, I...
Girl.
No, I'd keep that, just in case.
Yeah, girl.
That's evidence, in my opinion. Like, no.
Girl, I know. I'm here with you.
I get it. You need the space. You're spring cleaning. Like, okay.
Yeah. In 1950, there was a UFO sighting in Mount Hope, an hour and a half away from Flatwoods. Not to mention, Flatwoods is less than 2 hours away from Point Pleasant, notoriously known for its Mothman sightings between 1966 and 1967. And again, West Virginia is the only state entirely in Appalachia.
Is there a portal in Appalachia? Like, what?
I fucking think so, truly.
Yeah. I'm kind of with you on this one.
Allegedly, reports of strange activity in the hills of Braxton County and the surrounding areas were so common that residents barely noticed them anymore.
Wait, I love that.
Like, they're like, oh, okay.
Like, oh, you saw some shit? Yeah, that was my Tuesday.
Yeah, whatever.
I got to pick up groceries. I'll talk to you later. Good luck with that.
I mean, basically, yeah. Ashley Teets said, quote, "Back then, it was something happened every day. My grandmother always said that, you know, we're up on a ridgetop and they can watch us easier than they can anyone else. And they know the people up here are not going to talk."
Oh,
end quote.
I don't, that gave me serious chills. I don't Same. Like that. I don't like that at all.
Mm-mm. Well, Ed and Freddie spent most of their life not talking about what they had seen. They both appeared in the 2018 Flatwoods Monster documentary to finally set the record straight. Fred May, in his late 70s at that point, began the documentary saying, quote, "Well, as far as for myself, it doesn't make any difference whether people believe me or whether they don't," end quote. He knows what he and the other six people with him saw. And curiously, it might not be a monster at all. One of the most interesting aspects regarding the Flatwoods Monster is how to classify it. Some call it a cryptid, others an alien. But it might be neither. In one of the most fascinating moments of the documentary, Fred said, quote, "Point I want to get across is, it was nothing alive. It was a mechanical thing."
What?
I fucking know.
I'm blown away.
What the fuck is this?
My mind is exploding right now. What?
Girl.
It's like a lizard robot?
I don't know.
All right. Okay.
It was a mechanical thing that was pointed at the top and had portholes, which I've said in every interview I've ever had. It looked like on a ship porthole. And behind that porthole, there was light. You could see in behind, but I couldn't see anything. It was just one quick look and we were gone. End quote. His brother Ed reinforced the statement saying, quote, "All I know, it was mechanical. I know it was a little early in history to see something like that. But other than that, I can't explain it." End quote.
I am so intrigued. It's
same.
Like a, it's like a lizard mech suit. Okay.
It kind of like gives me Iron Giant vibes.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
This seems like some alien technology, though. Like,
I mean, what, yes.
Where else is this coming from? Come on.
Right. But I guess it's the thing is not a monster in itself, that it might be like a transportation device.
Oh, maybe,
or like a
okay.
suit.
I was assuming it was a suit. I guess it could just be like remotely controlled by something.
It could be that too. Like, I mean, who knows?
This raises so many more questions than it answers.
Girl,
and
I fucking know.
So intrigued. Okay.
When asked if he thinks people believe him, Ed said, quote, "I don't really think about it. To be honest with you, I wish it had never happened. And I wouldn't have to think about it. I wouldn't have to explain to people all the questions I get asked and all that. I'd rather it just go away. It's something you can't prove. And it just all comes down to trust. And there's just no point in talking to everybody about it. They got opinions. You're not going to change their opinion one way or the other." End quote.
Aw, that kind of breaks my heart a little.
A little. I mean, but you hear about it all the fucking time. All the fucking time.
Yeah. And I always say, like, if something crazy like this ever happened to me, I would tell everybody. But if everyone then treated me like I was a fucking crazy person and that I was insane, I would probably not tell people. So I get it.
Yeah. And in the documentary, he says that at school, that all the kids would be like, "Well, my parents said this," like to almost like give it credibility. Like he's like, "I don't even know if their parents said it," but it was like, it gave them a license to be mean and to taunt them.
Yeah.
I mean, like, "My daddy said that you made this up," or like, "My mommy said this."
Kids are fucking brutal. Yeah.
And like, because being like fucking 12 and 13 isn't hard enough. Going to school to have like this shit going on.
And to have this shit happen to you and then
yes!
try to just tell people and justify it. And then everyone fucking dismisses you and calls your credibility into question. Like, this would fuck me up so bad.
And it was also a thing that because their mother had her expenses paid to go to New York to do the CBS show. She wasn't paid to do the show, but they like flew her out. They're like, oh, well, she's clearly getting paid for this. So she's like making all this shit up.
No.
No. Especially if the Pentagon's like, "Don't say anything." I'm like, "Fuck you. I'm telling everyone."
Yeah.
CBS. Fuck yeah. Local John Gibson said, quote, "It's not so much whether they believe it or don't believe about it. It's just accepted. It's part of our folklore in Flatwoods, West Virginia." End quote. In recent years, the creature has reached a level of notoriety it never had reached during the height of the monster hysteria of 1952. In October of 2017, the Flatwoods Monster Museum opened at 208 Main Street in Sutton as part of Braxton County Convention and Visitors Bureau. There, visitors can read eyewitness accounts and newspaper clippings and see artist renderings of the Flatwoods Monster, as well as grab their very own green monster swag. The following year, the documentary The Flatwoods Monster premiered at the Elk Theater in Sutton. The year after that, the History Channel premiered the series Project Blue Book, which showed a fictionalized account of astronomer J. Allen Hynek's investigations into UFO sightings around the country as part of the Air Force's Project Blue Book, which sought to explain the increasing UFO reports of the 1950s and 60s as misidentifications of natural phenomena. Which J. Allen Hynek very famously is the one who came up with the, like, "It's just like Nerf gas or like weather balloons." Like,
yeah.
He's the one who, whenever people say that about UFOs, like, he's the one who kind of like started that bullshit. Which now we know is all not true because of soft disclosure.
Yeah. Thanks for gaslighting us.
Mm-hmm. The series' second episode covers the Flatwoods incident. And while there are some embellishments for dramatic effect, the episode stayed true to the basic core of the story. Not only that, the West Virginia cryptid has also been featured in several video games, including Everybody's Golf 4, The Legend of Zelda, Majora's Mask, and Fallout 76, which features the Flatwoods Monster prominently. The game takes place in West Virginia and also features fellow West Virginian cryptids, Mothman and the Grafton Monster.
What? I didn't know that.
Yeah, girl. The Flatwoods Monster is like one of the baddies that you fight in the game.
Fuck. By the way, that show just dropped all the episodes. I watched the first one. It's amazing.
With Walton Gibbons, love of my life.
He's amazing.
He's amazing at everything.
I watched the first episode last night, and it is phenomenal. Phenomenal. It's super bloody and gory, and I love it.
Because
it's very dark humor, too.
The Nolans, yes, who created Westworld. Ah. So I have very limited exposure to Walton Gibbons. I have not seen Justified, but he is every motherfucking thing in Vice Principals.
Oh, he steals the show, honestly.
Yeah, and everything, apparently. He just like steals every scene.
Yes.
And I believe Vanity Fair Hollywood Reporter did a whole like in-depth interview on him leading up to the Fallout series. Which is wonderful, and I highly recommend.
I'll have to check that out. Yeah, I get excited whenever he's in something. I'm immediately like, oh, okay, I'm sold. Say no more.
Yes. Abso-fucking. And then he's in The Righteous Gemstones. He's like little baby Billy or something like that.
Oh my God, I forgot.
Little baby so Uncle Billy, some shit like that.
Yes.
I don't really love that show, but I love him in it because he's iconic and everything.
Yes.
Well, this could just be a Walton Gibbons podcast, but
I wouldn't be bad about that, honestly.
I mean, same. While there have been no more reported sightings of the Flatwoods Monster since 1952, its lore is alive and well in more than just the small rural town in West Virginia. And that is the story of the Flatwoods Monster of Flatwoods, West Virginia.
Oh my God, I fucking loved it.
Thank you.
I'm even more excited about watching the rest of Fallout now, too.
Same.
Also, we did Psychic Sister hard.
Super hard. So hard.
I love it.
I was doing a job in New Jersey a year ago, and there was like the little touristy like pamphlets.
Yeah.
And they had like, oh, ghost tours and whatever the fuck. And then I saw one for Flatwoods Monster. And I was like, oh, that's like a cryptid. That seems like a cryptid. Cool. I'll just like save this for a story almost a year later. And then I was like, why? This isn't West Virginia. Why the fuck is this in New Jersey?
Okay.
Like super duper hard. We psychic sistered. So hard.
So hard. I loved that, though. That was really interesting. This was one of those that I had, you know, come across and I knew the name of, but I didn't really dive into it at all. So I didn't know any of this.
And, like, nothing really talks about how it's, like, mechanical.
Yeah. I assumed it was a cryptid.
Yeah, situation. A cryptid. That's what I thought. And I was like, that's a weird-ass looking cryptid, but okay. And it's in the documentary that they're like, I've literally said it since day one. It's a machine. It wasn't a cryptid.
That's even more fascinating to me.
I know.
I have so many questions. Science, get on this. I need to know what the fuck is going on here.
Science, you've been dropping the ball, girl. What the fuck? Get on this.
What are you, like, trying to cure diseases? No, I need to know what the fuck the Flatwoods Monster is, please.
For sure.
Thank you so much for that story. Again, my brain is just buffering right now. I don't even know what to say. I'm so intrigued. I have so many questions still.
I know.
What the fuck?
I know. What the fuck? But apparently, Flatwoods has like leaned in super hard into this whole thing.
I would too.
And they sell these cute little like Flatwoods doll type of things. Like, aww. And I was like, I kind of want one. It's super cute.
I love that.
So if any listeners in West Virginia, I'll Venmo you.
Send me a Flatwoods. Her adorable Flatwoods plushie, please.
Yeah.
That's really cute. Deeply fascinating. Yeah, if I had been gaslit by the government and basically everyone about this shit, I would have leaned in hard too after the fact.
Yeah. And you know, and that's such a shit thing because like you're being gaslit and then now it's like your main like export.
Yeah.
It's the Flatwoods Monster.
Rude.
Yeah.
Rude.
They have like monster burgers and shit at the Flatwoods Cafe. Of course they do. And I'm like, fuck you people.
Where's my money? Where's my fucking cut? The trauma was real.
Oh, for sure. But it was really sweet because their mother passed away, I believe, in 2009 when she was 89 years old. And they were like that the big thing to take away from it is that their mother put Flatwoods on the map. And that's the thing that their mother did.
Aw. That actually gave me chills, too. That's really sweet.
Like, well, I'm just going to sob now.
I know, right? Okay. Thanks for that. Oh, that was a fucking crazy-ass story. Thank you so much for that, though. I loved it.
For sure. Fucking wild.
Yeah. On that note, are you ready for my crazy-ass story this week?
I'm fucking ready, girl. Let's fucking go.
Yes. I'm super excited about this one. I have had this on my list to do for a while, and I actually have had it on there for so long that I also had to go through all of our old episodes to make sure it wasn't one we had done before.
Because that definitely happened to me, that I was into researching something and I was like, this kind of sounds familiar. And then I was like, ah, fuck.
Yep. Happened to me. And then I was like, does this sound familiar because I've already researched it before this? Or does this sound familiar because Monique told me about this already? But fortunately, we have not covered it. So.
Oh my God. So excited.
I'm covering it this week. All right, let's jump right into it. Sources: Atlas Obscura, All That's Interesting, Medium, Gizmodo, Milwaukee Mag, LA Times, LAist, MyLifetime.com, and Wikipedia. Well, Berga Korschel, who fortunately went by the much cuter nickname Dolly, was born in Germany in 1880, right before her parents immigrated to the United States. The family settled in the Milwaukee area in a community of other German immigrants. Dolly grew up on a farm, and since the family wasn't well off by any stretch of the imagination, and child labor laws weren't a thing yet, Dolly began working at a textile mill at the age of 12. The mill was owned by a fellow German immigrant named Fred Oesterreich. Fred had become very successful and owned several businesses by the age of 17. Now, Dolly was a very pretty, outgoing, and charismatic girl who had no trouble making friends among her fellow factory workers. So it should come as no surprise that she also quickly caught Fred's attention. And despite her very young age, remember, it's 1892 at this point, the two began dating and eventually got married when she turned 17. Dolly Korschel was now officially Dolly Oesterreich. However, even after their marriage, Dolly remained popular among Fred's employees, which, considering that Fred was, by all accounts, a dour, distant, and hard-nosed man who wasn't well-liked, i.e. the complete antithesis to friendly Dolly, it's unsurprising. And Dolly was known to frequently resolve labor disputes between her unlikable husband and his workers.
I don't understand this dynamic.
It's like the grumpy sunshine trope, yeah.
Like, I kind of do because I used to be very charmed by a grump. Yeah. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. When I was 17, I was totally charmed by a grump. The grump with a heart of gold.
Yes.
I love that shit.
Yes.
Now I'm like, that is so unattractive and so unappealing.
Yes.
I just want to be happy. I don't want my partner to ever be a liability or like the phone calls and the text messages after we all hang out, like apologizing for his behavior, which granted, I've definitely dated that person before.
Oh, no. But I mean, I'm with you on that. But again, consider the time and
sure.
You grew up poor, like to marry a wealthy businessman. It seems like a step up.
Yeah, totally.
Sure, he's a bit of a grump, but like you'll be rich. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, exactly.
Despite this and their wildly different dispositions, though, the marriage apparently started out happy enough. The two eventually had a son together who they named Raymond, but his unexpected death when he was just 9 years old put a strain on their relationship. It definitely didn't help the situation that Fred was also supposedly a heavy drinker. He also worked long hours at his apron factory while Dolly stayed at home, which left her rather unsatisfied. She had needs that her husband was either too busy or too drunk to meet, and not long into the marriage, it was rumored that she had started entertaining other men in her home during the day while Fred was at work.
Question, what's the age difference?
It's kind of unclear.
Okay.
because he was a successful businessman at the time of being 17. It doesn't say that they necessarily met at that time, but I don't think they're actually that far apart in age. I think it's maybe like 5 years.
Okay, cool.
Then in 1918, Fred suddenly told Dolly they were moving to Los Angeles. Although he had opened a factory on the West Coast, that was not the only reason he wanted to move. You see, for the past several years, he had started thinking he was going crazy. He was hearing strange noises in the house, including footsteps above his bed, and noticed that their food seemed to disappear faster than it should. He brought up his concerns to Dolly repeatedly, but she told him she had no idea what he was talking about and that it was just his overactive imagination. Blaming it on his overindulgence in alcohol and too much workplace stress, she suggested he go see a doctor. But when he did, the doctor couldn't find anything wrong with him. Fred didn't know if maybe the house was haunted or if he was actually going insane, but either way, he just wanted to get out of there, so it wasn't up for debate. Dolly agreed to the move, but she had one condition. She said their new house needed to have an attic. Although it was difficult, they eventually found a house overlooking Sunset Boulevard that suited their needs. But even after the move, Fred continued to hear the same noises that had plagued him in Milwaukee. He became more and more paranoid as time went on, and at this point was fully convinced he was going crazy. But again, whenever he brought the issues up to Dolly, she always brushed him off. As a result, the couple argued more frequently, and Fred drank even more than he did in Milwaukee. Then on the night of August 22, 1922, when Dolly and Fred returned home, they were arguing once again. Neighbors then heard gunshots and immediately called the police. When officers arrived, they found Dolly locked in the closet and Fred lying dead in the living room with multiple gunshot wounds, two in his chest and one to the back of his head. Dolly told the police that they had encountered a robber, that the man had killed her husband, stolen money and Fred's diamond watch, and had locked her in the closet as she was hanging up the fur coat she'd worn that evening. But the officers were slightly suspicious of Dolly's story, because one, she told them that her and her husband never fought, and she was adamant about this. But according to them, what married couple never fights?
Right.
Two, they could tell that Fred had been killed by a 25 caliber pistol, which is a very small caliber gun that's generally considered a quote-unquote woman's gun. So it hardly seemed a likely weapon for a male criminal. Not to mention, Fred was a very wealthy man, which, although that obviously would have been motive for robbers, would also have been motive for Dolly to murder him. But since the police had found Dolly trapped in a closet that was locked from the outside, they couldn't figure out, if she did kill him, how she had then locked herself in the closet afterwards. Although they were skeptical of her story, they didn't really have any evidence to challenge it and couldn't prove that it wasn't true. And since they had found her in a locked closet, they couldn't press any charges. The widowed Dolly, now free from her marriage, purchased a house nearby with the million she'd inherited after her husband's death. She also, apparently, happened to hit it off with Fred's estate attorney, Herman Shapiro. The two began dating, and not long after, Dolly gave Herman a gift, a diamond watch, identical to the one she'd said had been stolen during the robbery. Yep.
Why are you so bad at this?
Just wait. This story is bonkers. When Herman confronted her about it, she told him she'd eventually found the watch under a window seat cushion, but claimed that she didn't think she needed to tell the authorities about it. And Herman apparently just believed her. However, Herman, like Fred, also worked long hours, and eventually Dolly became unsatisfied with their relationship as well.
Because the thing is, if you want to be successful, you can't have a 9-to-5 life, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So if you want the monies, that means long hours.
Yep. Not all of us can just stay home all day, Dolly.
Girl, go to a talkie. What the fuck? Yeah. I don't even think talkies are a thing yet, but
get a hobby. I don't know. Fucking read a book. Do a pod. Like, you don't need to be fucking around on all these guys.
I know. God.
Although she didn't break things off with Herman, she started dating another man, a successful lawyer and aspiring actor named Roy Klum. And not long into their relationship, Dolly asked Roy for a favor. She told him she still had one of Fred's 25 caliber pistols that happened to look very similar to the one used to kill her husband. And fearing that the police might find it and think it was suspicious, she asked him if he would get rid of it for her. And not questioning this explanation at all, Roy agreed and threw the gun in the La Brea tar pits for her.
Is she like doing some like wild ass sexual shit?
Oh, yeah.
She has to be.
Monique, again, in the words of my mother, I'm pretty sure this woman
knows her way around a dick.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Dolly knows her way around a dick.
She's giving it to him good. I'm pretty sure.
I mean.
Just you wait. You're not even prepared, Monique. You're not ready for the level that this is going to be. Dolly's love triangle with Herman and Roy continued for almost a year until eventually she got bored with Roy and decided to end things with him. Unfortunately for Dolly, though, Roy was furious at the breakup and in retaliation for her rejection, immediately went to the authorities to report that she'd asked him to dispose of a gun for her.
Yeah, that's how that goes.
Yeah. Don't break up with the dude you asked to hide some
commit
shit.
Commit a
for
crime
you.
For you, girl.
Yeah. So one that matched the type used to murder her husband. Since Roy had thrown the gun in a shallow spot in the tar pits, police were successfully able to retrieve it.
Damn.
And Dolly was arrested on July 12, 1923, 11 months after Fred's death. News of the gun and Dolly's arrest made headlines. And when Dolly's neighbors saw the story, they immediately went to police with a second 25 caliber gun that Dolly had asked them to dispose of as well.
Jesus.
Yeah. Girl, it's wild. She'd told them the same story she'd told Roy, and believing her, they'd buried the gun in their backyard for her. Although both guns were too rusted to determine whether they'd been the ones used in the crime, Dolly's attempt to hide them made police once again suspicious that she'd been responsible for her husband's murder. While Herman was visiting Dolly in jail, though, she asked him for a very unusual favor. She told him that her quote-unquote vagabond brother was living in her attic and asked Herman if he could bring him some groceries. She told him to just tap on the ceiling of the bedroom closet and that he'd know to come out. Herman agreed, and after knocking on the closet ceiling, soon found himself face-to-face with Dolly's alleged brother. The man introduced himself to Herman as Otto Sanhuber and revealed that he was not actually Dolly's brother, but her live-in lover.
Of course.
And starved for conversation, Otto immediately began spilling all the tea about his and Dolly's relationship. The two had met in 1913 while Otto had been employed as a sewing machine repairman in Fred's apron factory, when the then 17-year-old had caught the 33-year-old Dolly's eye. Not long after, Dolly called up her husband and complained that their sewing machine was broken, assuming and secretly hoping that he would send the handsome young repairman in his employ to their house to fix it. Fred did, and when Otto knocked on the door, Dolly answered it wearing stockings, a silk robe, and nothing else.
Oh.
Needing no further convincing, Otto and Dolly immediately began their affair. At first, they kept their romantic rendezvous limited to hotels, but the expenses started adding up, and since it was Fred's fund she was using to pay for them, Dolly worried he would notice the missing money and start looking into it. So she started entertaining Otto at home instead. During the day, while Fred was busy at work, Dolly and Otto would fool around in the couple's bed. But the lovers were hardly discreet, and after a while, the neighbors began to notice and asked Dolly who the man who kept visiting her was. She told them that he was her, quote-unquote, vagabond stepbrother, and although they believed her, she became even more paranoid about being found out. Then Dolly came up with a brilliant idea and asked Otto if he would quit his job and move into their attic as her live-in booty call. The audacity, first of all, to just be like, hey, do you mind just like giving up your whole life and just like living in my attic so we can fuck whenever I need you to?
But here's the thing, like, he did it.
Yes, he did.
That's wild.
Since Otto didn't really have any friends or family, and no one would really notice his absence, he readily agreed. Sure, he had to live in the attic and abandon the outside world, but he wouldn't have to work or pay bills or buy food, since Dolly would keep him fed, and he'd get to have sex with Dolly all day, every day, while Fred was at work. And for a 17-year-old, this seemed kind of like a dream gig. Dolly furnished the attic with a cot and a desk and provided him with food, a lamp, and writing materials. When Fred was home, Otto spent his time in the attic reading the books Dolly had brought him from the library and pursuing his dream of writing adventurous and lusty pulp fiction stories, some of which he did manage to publish under a pseudonym. During the day, he spent his time in the house servicing Dolly, helping her keep house, and making bathtub gin. And this continued uninterrupted for the next 5 years.
Damn.
Yes. Until Fred announced that they were moving to LA. Because don't forget, he thought he was going crazy because he kept hearing footsteps above his bed and noticed mm-hmm. the food in the house was disappearing at an alarming rate. And despite knowing the reason for these strange occurrences, Dolly repeatedly gaslit the fuck out of him and told him it was all in his head.
There's so much audacity happening.
Girl, just wait. It's next level. Honestly, part of me just like wishes I had the balls of this woman because like I would never.
Like a little bit. Yeah. Like it's like when you kind of like respect it in a way because it's so fucking nuts.
Yes. Again, the audacity. Like, according to the Wikipedia, one of her nicknames, which like I couldn't really find this in any of the other articles, but according to Wikipedia, one of her nicknames was the Queen of Los Angeles, which like, I mean.
Oh, what does that mean?
I don't know, but after this shit, I kind of get it. Despite the news of their imminent move, however, Dolly wasn't ready to give up the convenience of her live-in lover just yet. So she requested that their new house have an attic. And before she and Fred headed to California, she sent Otto ahead to move into his new hideaway. And for another 4 years,
he continued
living in their home. He kept occasionally publishing stories and used the profits to buy a typewriter and help Dolly pay for food for him. On the night of Fred's death, Otto had heard the couple fighting downstairs and, worried that Dolly was in danger, climbed down from the attic and emerged brandishing one of Fred's two 25 caliber pistols. He confronted Dolly's enraged husband, who obviously immediately recognized him from his time at the factory. Right. And suddenly realizing what had been going on for nearly a decade right under his nose, and understandably furious, Fred lashed out at Otto. The two got into a physical altercation, and during the fight, Otto shot Fred 3 times, killing him instantly. When Dolly and Otto realized her husband was dead, the two began to panic. Deciding to stage the crime as a robbery gone wrong, she handed Otto a bunch of cash from their bedroom and Fred's diamond watch. He then locked her in the closet and climbed back up into the attic with the money, watch, and both guns to hide. But even though Dolly had escaped any charges for the murder and was now a single woman, she continued to keep Otto relegated to the attic of her new home. It seems their relationship had shifted into one based on dominance and submission, and Dolly enjoyed keeping the young man, as Otto later described it, as her quote-unquote sex slave.
I mean, obviously.
Yeah. When Otto finished telling Herman, Dolly's other lover, about their decade of sexual exploits, the shocked lawyer gave the man an ultimatum. Leave immediately and never return, or Herman would reveal everything Otto had confessed to him. So, without putting up a fight, the terrified Otto immediately fled to Canada. Despite Herman's discovery that Dolly had not only been cheating on him, but had kept a lover hidden in 3 different attics over the past 10 years, it apparently didn't bother him.
What the fuck? You know what? Dolly, tell me your tricks, girl.
Right?
She knows her way around a dick.
She's doing something. I don't know what it is, but...
Like, what's your OnlyFans? Teach me your ways. Because she's doing some wild-ass shit.
Yeah.
Unless these are all men who just, like, need to be, like, degraded or something. And she's like, oh, yeah,
maybe.
I got you.
I don't know.
Girl, I don't know.
I think this is, like, a whatever they want. She's like, yeah, I'm down. Let's do this.
Yeah. That's what I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And even stuff that maybe is, like, very, like, taboo to do. She's like, yeah, that's my A number one, girl.
Oh, yeah.
Got
she's
you.
She's putting a finger up there, Monique. Don't you worry.
I love how my brain went to, like, 3 ways. And you're like, no. Finger in the butt.
Finger in the butt, yeah.
Absolutely.
Maybe that's what she's doing. It doesn't seem like it. Inviting other ladies into this?
Yeah, I think she's too smart for that.
Who knows?
She's not going to bring some chicken to threaten her shit.
No. But again, she's doing something right here, clearly.
I mean, clearly. Fuck.
So, again, apparently doesn't bother Herman, and he went on to bail Dolly out of jail. Since the guns were so eroded from being buried for so long, and police couldn't find any evidence on them linking them to Dolly or proof that those were even the guns used in the murder, the charges against her were dropped, and she once again walked free. Afterwards, Dolly and Herman moved in together and spent the next 7 years living together. But even though she no longer had a live-in lover at her beck and call, Dolly was still a woman with a considerable sexual appetite and once again began cheating on Herman with another man. When he came home one day and found them in bed together, he was furious and broke things off with her. In an act of revenge, he then immediately went to the police station and told them about Dolly and Otto and what had happened the night of Fred Oesterreich's murder. The authorities once again arrested Dolly in 1930, 8 years after her husband's death, and began searching for Otto Sanhuber. But it took them a year to locate him. After he'd fled to Canada, he changed his name and eventually got married. However, he'd recently moved back to LA, where he was ultimately found by police and apprehended for the murder of Dolly's husband. And he immediately confessed everything to investigators. His time in her attic, the love affairs, how the murder of Fred took place, as well as what happened after. He told them he had an overpowering love for Dolly, and that on the night of Fred's death, he truly believed her husband was going to kill her, so he shot him to protect her. He even took officers to the house and showed them where he'd hid in the attic. After his confession, Otto was placed under arrest and charged with manslaughter. It should come as no surprise that the press had an absolute field day with the salacious story, and it quickly made front page news across the country. Dolly was portrayed as a lusty femme fatale with an insatiable sexual appetite, while newspapers dubbed Otto as the quote-unquote Batman of Los Angeles after learning of his cave-like existence in the attic.
Damn.
Which is absolutely hysterical and the worst moniker that they could come up with.
That's a bummer.
Yeah. Because again, this is before the comic books, so Batman is not a cool thing in any way, shape, or form. During Otto's trial, he recanted his confession, and his defense lawyer argued that because Dolly had locked him up and kept him as a quote-unquote sex slave since he was 17, he should be found not guilty due to the reason of insanity. The deputy district attorney called him a quote-unquote perjurer of his own soul, however, and the jury disagreed with the insanity plea. While he was found guilty, the statute of limitations on manslaughter was 7 years, and 8 years had passed since Fred's death.
Shut the fuck up.
Girl. So they were forced to drop the charges, and Otto Sanhuber, now 43, ultimately walked free.
That's fucking wild.
So wild. With the realization that they couldn't convict Dolly of manslaughter due to the statute of limitations as well.
They have to go murder one, right?
No, because she didn't shoot him. Authorities decided to charge her with conspiracy instead. During her trial, Dolly admitted that Otto shot her husband and covered it up to look like a robbery, but claimed she took no part in either and had only lied to the police to protect Otto. She said, quote, "I didn't believe he meant to do it, and I didn't want to expose my life to the world, having him in the house," end quote. She went on to testify that despite the fact that she'd hid Otto in the attic for 10 years, I will never get over this. Mm-mm. She still loved her husband and hadn't wanted him dead. The prosecution portrayed her as a cold-blooded murderer who aided her lover in perpetrating the crime and said, quote, "If there is any sympathy to be felt in this case, do not waste it on this woman," end quote.
Damn.
Yeah.
I mean, but also not wrong.
Not wrong. Yeah. His final words to the jury were, quote, "Hang this woman," end quote.
You can hang someone for conspiracy?
I have no idea. Maybe he's just fucking talking crazy.
Like metaphorically?
Yeah. I don't know. It's 1930. I don't know if they're
We're just playing it fast and loose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
However, her trial resulted in a hung jury. Mm. Ironic, considering the prosecution's final words.
Yep.
So Dolly, too, ultimately left court a free woman, and the indictment against her was finally dropped in 1936. After her trial, Dolly remained in Los Angeles, living her life as a wealthy widow, and eventually started dating a man named Raybert Hedrick. After spending the next 30 years together, the two finally married in 1961, less than 2 weeks before Dolly passed away at the age of 80. It's unknown whatever happened to Otto Sanhuber after his trial. Dolly's story was eventually portrayed in the 1968 feature film The Bliss of Mrs. Blossom, starring Shirley MacLaine, and two made-for-TV movies, 1995's The Man in the Attic, starring Neil Patrick Harris as Otto, and 2018's Lover in the Attic with Molly Burnett. And that is the batshit insane, pun intended, story of Dolly Oesterreich, her attic-dwelling lover, Otto Sanhuber, and the murder of Fred Oesterreich.
One, that's insane. That whole thing was insane. I remember, like, reading about a woman who, like, had her lover in the attic and, like, moved them, like, house to house. I didn't remember all the other shit. I didn't remember it was a decade.
A decade.
Girl.
Like, I just, like, don't know how this guy was down for this long.
That's what I'm saying. Like, what are like, you doing, Dolly?
Yes.
What are your tricks?
I'm just saying, Monique.
Knows her way around a dick.
She knows her way around a dick.
I mean, that's, you know, clearly. Clearly.
Yes. This story was a little on the shorter side, but it was so fucking wild, and I just couldn't resist. I couldn't resist. It's so insane.
Like, I kind of feel like she had to have been fucking people in the jury.
Oh, I didn't even consider
that. She's fucking everybody.
Me. She kind of is.
Not slut-shaming, but, like, you know.
I mean, get it, Dolly.
She gets, clearly, fuck.
Yeah. Insatiable sexual appetite, apparently.
I mean, I just don't understand. Like, I don't know. It's wild.
It's wild. Correct. Jinx. It is wild. The audacity.
Severe.
That being said, from Otto's point of view, like, honestly, as, like, a homebody who loves to just, like, read and write and stuff, like, I could probably chill in an attic and read books and hang out, come down, fuck around a little bit, pop back up.
Well, like, attics are, like, low, right? They're not very tall.
I guess not.
I've not really been in attics before.
I was like, it depends on the roof, I guess. Some of them sure. are a little bigger. Like, I know people who, you know, redid their attics and it's like a fun loft situation. I've also been in some attics where you literally were like a crawl space
basically. Yeah. If I can't fully stand up, that's not ideal for me to live this attic life.
That's fair. You're much taller than me. I would fit in an attic, am. No problem.
Yeah. See, I learned this in the pandemic that I like being around people. I just don't necessarily like engaging with them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, I could live that attic life. Got my books. I can do my lusty writings, like write my erotica. I'm great.
Yeah.
Sold. That being said, I don't know. I could do it for 10 years and literally never leaving, never coming out. The dick better be really good for that situation.
Girl, what's the bathroom situation? Is he just going in a bucket in the attic? It's not like plumbing and shit up there.
I somehow never considered this, Monique.
Yeah.
All right. I'm out of the attic situation now. I don't want to pee in a bucket. My bladder is way too tiny for me to hold it like all night. No.
Girl, I mean,
I literally had to pee during this recording because I couldn't hold it. I'd be fucked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I guess he just has to, like, get it all out during the day, and then he just, like, doesn't drink any water after a certain period of time.
What if you get the runs?
Oh my God, Monique, you just have to shit yourself in the attic.
Just be like, girl.
Oh no, that's a nightmare. No.
It's a nightmare.
No. And, like, what if you get sick or something? Like, oh, yeah. No.
If you get, like, bronchitis or the black lung or some shit, you have
can't
to, like,
cough.
You have to muffle your coughs.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm okay with being a kept woman. If you want to pay my shit and you like, we can have sex whenever. That's pretty cool.
That's what I'm saying.
But like, I need like indoor plumbing. I can need to be able to stand up fully.
Yeah.
And just go outside, get some fresh air.
That's fair.
I ask for so little, Amy.
You really do. You're very low maintenance, honestly. Same. I'm into the bathtub gin making, though, as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's fun.
That does sound like fun. Yeah,
for sure. Get some juniper berries in this bitch.
Yeah.
Some botanicals.
I'd just be fucking passed out drunk on gin in the attic.
Which is literally my life in the pandemic. But not in an attic, just not in my apartment.
Oh, my God.
I loved that. I feel like maybe, I don't know if I knew all of it or just my brain didn't retain it before because it was so fucking nuts.
It's wild. I know. I literally couldn't remember her name when I was like searching for it again. And I was just like, lover in attic. And then it was immediately like, here you go.
Here you go. Here you go, girl.
It's Dolly. Here she is. And I was like,
only one,
that was
one person's had the audacity.
The audacity.
Severe.
And like, again, I'm not condoning this, but also, no. Like,
gotta respect it a little bit.
Respect it a little bit, yeah.
Because, like, you know, I think one of the major life lessons I learned from my mother was that if you don't ask, you don't know. And here's the thing, like, any reasonable person would assume, if I could just, like, if I just asked this dude to, like, live in my attic and, like, not come down.
The worst he can say is no.
I'm gonna assume he says no, but, like, maybe be into
maybe
it.
Maybe he's down. He's totally down.
Clearly. Fuck.
It did not seem like he was like, you know what? Give me a day to think about it. He was like, yeah, I'll totally quit my job and just live in your attic. Cool. Will you bring me books from the library? Yeah. Amazing. Great. Say no more.
Yeah, I don't love anyone like that.
No. Wild. Wild. Again, 10 fucking years in this attic. And like when Herman saw him, he was like very thin and pale because he hasn't seen the sun in fucking
He's like a fucking vampire.
Oh my God. Like what the fuck? So yeah, that was the Batman of Los Angeles. I could not get over it.
I love that. And you did an amazing job.
Thank you. I thought we needed something that was slightly more lighthearted after your story last week.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Last week was a roller coaster.
It was very emotional. And RIP to Fred, but otherwise this was a very ridiculous, entertaining true crime story.
Yeah, man. I guess the lesson is if you learn how to work that D, you can get anyone to do any manner wild shit for you. Any manner wild shit.
Take some lessons from Dolly. Just like put a finger up there, I guess. Just go for it. Go for it. I'm convinced that's what she was doing. And they were just like, oh.
I wonder if that's what it was.
I don't know. She had some sort of trick.
She had some shit. Something going on.
She knew things.
Yeah.
You know, Dolly, you fucking got away with it. Three times. You got arrested under suspicion.
I'm never
going to
get over it.
And you fucking got off. So. In more ways than one, apparently.
Ayo. I was just going to say, ayo.
I'm sorry. There were so many puns and so many dick jokes.
It was wonderful. I loved it. Don't ever change.
Thank you. I love you. Don't ever change.
Thank you.
And we love you. Oh, my God. Thanks for listening. This is another fucking horror podcast. I'm Monique Sanchez.
And I'm Amy Traden.
You can find me on the gram at pinupgirlmo.
You can find me at lobotomy, and that's lobot period Amy.
And you should follow the show on the gram. We're at another fucking horror podcast because at 6 p.m. on Monday, the day this comes out, April 14th.
15th.
15th. Thank you. Tax day. Boom. April 15th, tax day, 6 p.m. We are going live to talk about all of the fun goodies and shit that we have coming up. We can't wait to talk to you and take your questions and just say, hey, what's up, girl? How you doing? So do that. Go on our website, anotherfuckinghorrorpodcast.com. It's very possible that your server will be like, this has fucking in it. It might be a problem. It's not, I promise you. Because we encountered that.
J Just put it in and hit enter. It'll work.
It'll work.
The fucking, and yes.
You'll get to see our gorgeous faces and check out our merch. Great shit.
Yes. Because we didn't even mention it. One of our other surprises, the thing we did together when we took a road trip, was our photo shoot. So you get to see some photos from our photo shoot together, our spooky photo shoot.
It's so fun. Oh my God. It looks amazing. If you like this show, please sign up for our Patreon, sign up for our newsletter, and rate, review, and subscribe, and tell your friends. The more people who know about it and the more people who subscribe and review the show, the more visibility we have, so that hopefully on the sooner rather than later timeline, we can do this shit full time for you lovely, gorgeous folks. We are so fucking obsessed with you. We can't wait to talk to you soon.
Yes.
In the flesh, in the Instagram flesh. We will see you soon. Keep it cute, kids.
Keep it creepy.
Bye.